This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The Dr. Courtney Show is brought to you by Novavax Vaccines. Essential protection for essential bonds.
Hi, welcome to the Dr. Courtney Show. I'm Dr. Courtney Campbell, brought to you by Merck Animal Health. Listen, I am so excited today. I'm really, really pumped. We've got a lot to get to in this podcast. I just want to thank everybody for joining us. These are the kind of podcasts that really, really animate me, really get me excited because we're talking about something that a lot of people say to me on a daily basis. I've got a really exciting guest that I can't wait to get to. But just to frame what we're going to talk about today, I want to just talk about the word rescue. What does it mean when people say the word rescue? And I just want you to think about that in your own mind, what it means. And listen, I mean, we all know the definition of rescue. It's to, you know, save someone or something from like a distressful situation or to take somebody to safety. So there's an assumption there when you say the word rescue that the person or individual or life that you're referring to is not in a good place, is not in a safe place, or could be in a better place. And so we know what that word means to all of us. And this podcast is dedicated to all of those pet parents out there who are tuned into their pets, tuned into animal life in general, and are doing amazing things. And so when we talk about the intersectionality between the word rescue and these amazing pet parents, we get to a term and a phrase that I hear on a daily basis. I hear, hey, Doc, Dr. Campbell, I just want to introduce you to my new pet. She's a rescue, or he's a rescue. And the reason why we celebrate that term, the reason why we bring that up is because it means a lot. It means a lot to adopt a pet from a shelter environment or from a rescue environment. And when I'm thinking about the word rescue, when I'm thinking about what it means to adopt a brand new pet, there's only one person I want to talk to, and that is Dr. Dines. Now, let's pause for a break for a quick message, and we'll be right back.
Sit. Stay. We'll be right back after a short pause. Well, four to be exact.
Pets for Patriots improves the lives of veterans and military families through companion pet adoption. We help veterans adopt a new pet friend while giving the most overlooked, undervalued shelter animals hope in a home. We are a nationally operating 501c3 nonprofit organization. To veterans, Pets for Patriots gives the unconditional love of a rescued pet. Our program helps veterans coping with PTSD, depression, and other invisible wounds, men and women transitioning from military to civilian life, those who are separating from loved ones through deployment, and veterans living with loneliness. We're proud to serve veterans from World War II to those currently in service from all branches of the armed forces. The animals saved through our work are those who face the greatest risk of death or long-term homelessness, adult and special needs dogs and cats, and large breed dogs. Our program gives these wonderful creatures a second chance at life. To learn more and get involved, please visit us at petsforpatriots.org.
Welcome back to the Dr. Courtney Show. Here's what's amazing about our guest. Dr. Dines is currently joining us in the trenches from her Humane Society right now. Thank you, Dr. Dines, for joining us. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Just to give a little background.
Certainly, please. I just really wanted to hear how you got into this unique field, because what I don't think a lot of people realize is that shelter medicine and working in the Humane Society is so important that it is a subspecialty. And could you just talk just with me, because I love learning too, and just with all of our listeners, how did you get into this subspecialty and what does it mean to you?
Before I started veterinary school, I actually worked in the shelter that I currently work at, not as a veterinarian, obviously. I worked in the lab staff, and there's a lot of shelters within the area that we work with, and it's Definitely a different field. It's a really tough field. If you talk to any shelter vet, there's a lot of burnout and there's a lot of turnover in the field because it's hard to see what you see on a daily basis. So it's hard to take care of hundreds of animals at once. But the fact that you can help many animals and you can see the good outcomes with a lot of families that do rescue these animals and take really great care of them, it's really positive. The other thing is that as a veterinarian, they've created now this specialty, a boarded specialty in shelter medicine, and that's something I decided to pursue. And that's because I dealt with a flu outbreak at my shelter. So in the University of Wisconsin, and Mark kind of came in to help us through that process. And after that, I said, well, maybe I should kind of invest in this specialty and continue forward. So that's what I'm doing while working at the shelter. And I just think that there can be a lot of good outcomes. It's really community-based. And you can see everybody that kind of encompasses and surrounds the shelter and makes the great things happen that they do.
That's incredible. You mentioned helping and being compassionate and reaching out to the community. And, you know, every community out there has a rescue shelter, as they, some people refer to it as the pound. But every community out there is working to hopefully provide animals who are relinquished or strays a safe place so that they're not subject to some of the deleterious aspects of the just out in the environment. And so that is one word that really resonates with me, is community. Now, when people from the community who are well-intentioned come in and say, listen, I don't want to go to a breeder. I don't want to buy a dog. I want to go to a humane society. I want to go to a shelter and I want to adopt a new pet into my house to become a new pet parent. What kinds of things should I be looking for? How do I know that this is the right pet for my household, specifically around a behavioral framework?
So we talk a lot about the Adopter's Welcome Being, which is an HSUS project. And so we allow people to choose what they think is best for their household, because we think about how many adopters have been turned away by rigorous processes, and maybe they were actually the perfect adopter.
Right. I hate to interrupt you. Just for everybody out there, could you quickly define HSUS project?
The Humane Society of the United States, the Adopter's Welcome Program, what it is it's pretty much not a rigorous jump through the hoops to adopt an animal. It's you have the well intentions, you're coming to a shelter to adopt because you want to adopt because you want to save a life. You're not coming to a shelter to do something harmful to an animal. You're coming because you want to make a difference. And so why should we make that hard for people? It should be a celebrated thing that people are coming and they're making this decision out of the goodness of their hearts. And so what we try to do is we, you know, if they have, you know, we would like a younger dog, or we would like an older dog, or we would like a dog that's great with children, shelters can make those recommendations. However, you don't deter people unless there's a real reason to deter them from that dog. If somebody is elderly and they want an energetic dog, maybe they want that dog to walk around with and to keep their energy going. That doesn't mean they get declined for that dog. If they think that's a good fit for them, they're allowed to make that choice as a good fit. Because who am I to say that you're not, you know, active and walking 10 miles a day just because you're elderly?
By the way, I really should be walking 10 miles a day. So I like the fact that you're bringing that up, because that is, you know, maybe I need to adopt a dog to do that. But no, certainly continue, because what you're saying is just so important, is that when you people add or people invite or rescue pets into their household for a variety of reasons, and, you know, there is that blend between what the beauty of what that pet brings and what you're hoping that pet to bring as well, right?
Right. And I think the biggest thing, too, is that an understanding a rescue animal or any animal, it doesn't matter if they come from a breeder or not, is that it's a huge transition going into a home. It's completely changing what they've previously known. And it's stressful. If you can imagine packing up, you know, your family and your kids and moving and taking them to a new school, everybody recognizes that is really stressful. But do they recognize how stressful it is when they do rescue an animal with their well intentions and everybody's doing it for the right reasons? But they have to understand that there's patience in rescuing or taking home any animal, and that there's a transition period in doing that.
Yeah, you know, listen, I want to be honest, and I'm not just saying this because it makes me sound awesome, but my first pet was a rescue. Every pet that I would, you know, ever have or invite into my house will be a rescue from the Humane Society or from the shelter, because, or just from, you know, we're around pets all day long, and sometimes we see some pretty sad situations that we can pull pets from. For instance, you know, we just saw a dog out here in California. I'm out in sunny Santa Barbara, and for some reason, because it's so beautiful and because the weather's so nice, a lot of people will take their dogs off leash. And that's sad, because there are a lot of dogs who aren't microchipped who end up being lost and coming into our hospital environment. I am focused on surgery. I do a lot of surgery. We go ahead, fix these fractures, and then they need somebody to adopt them. They need a new home. And so it's both beautiful and sad sometimes in that I'm surrounded by pets who need adopting, and we can give them that new home. So it's really nice. But one thing that I noticed from my dogs, and I really would love for you to speak to this, is that transition period that you mentioned, in that you might see a beautiful pet in the shelter environment and you say, you know, that's just not the kind of personality that I was hoping for. But then after day two or day three, they really come out of their shell. Kind of like me at parties. You got to give me 10 minutes before I come out of my shell. So I would love for you to speak to that transition period.
Well, we encourage people to give them some time. A lot of people come in and they're looking for the perfect family dog, and that's every shelter dog can be that perfect family dog, but they need the time to do that. And they also need the training and the reinforcement to be able to do that. People don't have children and think that they can be perfect in one day, and it's the same thing with an animal. Allowing them a gradual transition is wonderful. I think one of the biggest mistakes is one of the most well-intentioned mistakes that people make, and that they get a shelter animal and they're so excited and they want to introduce that animal to everybody. They have their whole family at home, their neighbors, their cousins, and they're waiting. They're waiting to meet this dog that's so, so stressful for them to come in. And then when the dog is, you know, timid or is a little fearful, aggression can occur. And I think that's the biggest scare there, is that they bring home this dog that was wonderful in shelter, but now they have 15 people surrounding them because they're so excited to have this animal. And it's just a little bit too much at once. And so what we recommend is that everything be gradual. It's quiet for a couple days. Introductions are slow. If you need to use a baby gate, if you need to go on a walk with, you know, your aunt that'll be coming over every day, or your grandmother, or anything like that, that it's just a slow transitional period for them, and to make them as comfortable as possible and understanding that this can be really stressful for them.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, if you're slow and gentle, if you decrease the amplitude of your interactions for those dogs who are really cautious, I just see such positive and amazing things that can happen. But when people have a sort of idealistic notion that, you know what, we're just going to pull this little guy out of a shelter environment and then put him around people he doesn't know, doesn't recognize, he has no clue what they're actually saying to him or her, then that could be really challenging. But like you were saying, there's so many people that go slow and gentle, and they turn out to be just wonderful, wonderful adopting parents. Now, you mentioned something that's super important, and we have to talk about this on the flip side, and that is introducing to everybody. And so when you start introducing your new pet to a bunch of new dogs or a bunch of new people, there's one thing we want to make sure, and that they are completely safe. For them, the medical care is fantastic, and we also want to make sure they're safe to everybody around him, including other dogs. And I know the Humane Society and shelters all across the country are working hard to make sure that any newly adopted pet is medically safe and that they are well taken care of. Let's talk about that on the flip side, and we'll be back right after these messages.
We'll be right back right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Angela Hobson, and I'm the Executive Director and Founder of SOAR Initiative, Street Outreach and Animal Response. Our mission is to preserve the bond between person and pet while individuals are experiencing homelessness or other crises such as domestic violence. We provide street outreach to homeless individuals. We also have a vetting program and a foster care program that houses people's pets so they can become engaged in programs that will help them get off the street or gain stability. You can best help us by following our Facebook page at facebook.com/SOARINDY. That's SOARINDY. We post most of our needs there. We also have a website, www.soarinitiative.com, and we can accept email there if you prefer that. Look forward to talking with you.
Unleashing the power of your pets. Pet power. Talk radio with bites. We're Pet Life Radio, the number one pet radio network. Let's talk pets.
And we're back. We're talking with Dr. Dines. I'm so excited and just so pumped to have her on this podcast. We've been involved in a riveting conversation just about rescuing. And sometimes, listen, I say this all the time. People know that I say this and they say this as well. And that is, we don't know who's rescuing who. Sometimes we're rescuing these pets from the shelter and sometimes they're rescuing us because they find us and just add such amazing light and love to our homes. We're with Dr. Dines right now. She's in the thick of things. She's in the trenches right now taking care of pets at the Northwest Humane Society in Indiana. And one thing we wanted to jump into is just in terms of medical care when we're adopting a new pet. And Dr. Dines, would you mind speaking to the idea that adopting a pet from a humane society is an ideal situation because at that particular facility, you guys go through all the medicals, correct?
Right. I think a big thing that we discuss and try to encourage a lot of shelters to do is at our shelter, all animals coming through the door are vaccinated immediately coming in the door. And that's to do the best that we can to protect them because we don't know their history. A lot of them are strays. Some are from owners that can't really afford to care for them anymore. So their vaccine history is minimal or non-existent. And so to keep everybody healthy in the shelter and to keep that animal healthy in the shelter, the first thing we do is vaccinate, which is a huge expense for any shelter. But it's something that we think is valuable and it's something that we encourage people to continue care with their veterinarian outside of the shelter. Furthermore, every animal that leaves out of our building is either spayed or neutered, which is a pretty hefty expense if you look at it through a private practice standard. And we also microchip, we deworm, we give them flea and tick medication, we give them heartworm medication, we heartworm test dogs coming through the door, and we treat heartworm positive dogs. And those are all really
incredible.
Pretty expensive things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This is incredible because you don't know their history, you don't know where they're coming from. And so it's so important to look out for infectious disease. And what you're saying is when you get a brand new puppy, these are all of things that the puppy absolutely needs, but it's an expense on the new parents. But what it sounds like you're saying is that if you are able to rescue a dog from the Humane Society, it sounds like all of these things are taken care of.
They are. And I mean, the adoption fees are not to make money by any means at a shelter for how much money and time is put into an animal. And we don't look at them as money and time. However, the amount that we're putting in, we always tell people, like they said, I can get it free from Craigslist or online. And we say, this is how much a free dog costs once you get their vaccines and their heartworm medication and their flea and tick and their surgery. And, you know, and a checkover, this is how much that free dog costs, which is way more expensive than our adoption fee. And so we always tell people, just be aware, like, we're not doing this for the profit or the money. We're doing this for the betterment of the animal.
Yeah, I 100% anytime. Listen, these are the realities, these things that these pets need. They cost money. They're not free. But the good thing is, luckily, if you do adopt a pet into your household, what I always celebrate is the fact that you will not have to send that pet to college. So that's good. You can save all of that money and use it to get them well taken care of. Now, I could be partial. I just wanted to know your opinion. When these pets come in for further means of identification, we're talking microchipping, about 10 million. That's the number that is really kicked around from a lot of these Humane Society organizations. 10 million pets are lost every year, and microchips can help prevent that. I'm partial to the Home Again microchip. Could you speak to microchipping in general, if you think it's important, and if you think the Home Again microchip is a worthwhile microchip to have?
I think any microchip is a worthwhile chip to have. We microchip every single animal that goes out of our building. But if any microchip has a means of identifying an animal and having you be able to contact that company and being able to get your animal back, we've seen some wonderful stories of animals that have come here from six shelters away, you know, six towns over, because the person picked them up on the way to work and the shelter happened to be on the way to work and we were able to reunite that dog. Whereas, do you think that person would think that their dog's six towns over? Likely not. And so they can do really wonderful things.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I just talked to a gentleman who told me that his dog was at a boarding facility and escaped. And now this sounds a little bit implausible and unbelievable, except if you really know dogs. He said that that dog ran approximately 4 or 6 blocks after it escaped from the boarding facility back to its home without getting hit by a car. So when you say wonderful things, the microchip is so important, but these dogs sometimes just have that inner GPS, which I'm fascinated by dogs in general, and I just think that's incredible. But microchipping, so important. Like you said, the microchip, we use a Home Again microchip, but like you said, every microchip is so important. I just wanted to talk about one thing that for some reason just is not as emphasized, and that is the aspect of deworming. I know it sounds like a kind of a silly or trivial thing, but you know, when I think about deworming, my preference to get rid of parasites, intestinal parasites, is Panacure. But to get rid of roundworms, hookworms, whipworms, these kinds of things, I don't think a lot of people realize that's important because of the potential to spread to other dogs and sometimes to humans.
Yeah, that's correct. We generically deworm dogs coming in, not always with Panacure. However, we do use Strongid or Pyrantel for every dog coming in. They also get heartworm prevention on top of that.
Excellent.
And then we have any dogs of concern that have loose or runny stools, et cetera, they get fecal checks. And if they do have something like whipworm on there, we do treat them with Panacure. We also treat for coccidia, which in some cases practitioners feel like it's self-limiting. But in a shelter, it's really important to us to go ahead and treat that. And where our biggest concern is trying to send home an animal as healthy as possible, but also with the understanding that, you know, in the shelter right now, we have 200 animals. And
200.
So it's kind of like a triage.
Wow, you guys are just surrounded by animals. That's a lot of barking.
And meowing.
And meowing. I can't forget the meow. That is absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, I think for me, what I'm fascinated by is that because of the tremendous caseload and the, you know, you can certainly look at the fact that a lot of animals are relinquished back to, they're relinquished or to a shelter, to a humane society. And so certainly we would love for that number to be lower. But what I love to hear is people like you in the trenches, and you have developed this level of efficiency where these pets are very well taken care of, but you've developed this well-oiled machine where you can help out a lot of pets. It help out a lot of pets, high volume, in a quick amount of time. I just think that that level of efficiency is really incredible. Do you feel like where you are right now, you're operating as, for lack of a better term, a well-oiled machine?
I think there's always room for improvement. But
I love that.
We've got a lot of things down pat to an extent. And I think the biggest thing is that we always talk about in the shelter is that you kind of learn to work it like an ER. You triage. If you have 200 animals, and you're hoping that you're vaccinating, and you're doing everything right, and you're preventing disease, but that doesn't mean that there's not ever disease. And so you kind of take care of what's most important first and foremost, and you kind of go downward, and you try to make sure that everybody's getting the best care and the care that they need.
Oh, my goodness. Do you have any pets yourself?
Yes, I have what I call my herd. I live on 10 acres, so I have 4 dogs and 6 cats that
you
are
live
all
on
shelter animals.
Jeez. You live on 10 acres?
I do.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, you basically have a pack out there. It's basically like National Geographic.
Yep, they're all the special shelter animals that needed a little bit more care. And I thought, who better to go home with than a veterinarian?
Oh, honestly, I love that so much. Listen, you've been fantastic. I just want to remind everybody out there who's doing amazing things with pets. I mean, Dr. Dine, she's wonderful to talk to. This is who I was so pumped to get a chance to talk to you today. You know, just as we think about adopted pets, you brought up some great behavioral considerations, which is nice, slow transition, go slow and gentle, which I think is so important. You also talked about just making sure that all the medicals are taken care of. And that is one of the best and most illustrative examples of why it's great to adopt a pet from a humane society is that vaccines, spay, neuter, microchip, heartworm, deworming, and like they say, there's more to poop than just worms. You mentioned coccidia as well. And just those are some of the highlights on adopting a pet and why it's so important. Please, just from the bottom of my heart and from everybody who's listening too, we just want to thank you, Dr. Dines, for joining us today. This has been a wonderful, wonderful conversation, and we're going to ask you to come back if you don't mind.
Thank you. And it's wonderful to be able to speak about shelter. It's something I'm obviously really passionate about. And I thank everybody that takes the time to adopt from a shelter. That's extremely wonderful and amazing to me.
Thank you for the work you do. And there's so much more to delve into on this topic. Please, we will definitely would love if you would join us again for another podcast.
Absolutely. It sounds
okay. Amazing. Thanks again. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. That was Dr. Dines. How incredible was she? I mean, just in the trenches talking to us from, you know, she's about to go through her daily triage, as she says. But it was just wonderful to get a chance to talk to somebody who's actually doing major, major work and making improvement in the lives of pets everywhere. So, excellent. Thank you so much for joining us. Please join us for the next podcast. We're going to be talking with just more exciting guests. I'm signing off. And as I always say, just remember, there's nothing stronger than the human-animal bond.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.